Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio. We're here to explore the people, stories, and events in our multi-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Paul Wearson, but my regular co-host, Susan Franson, is here in spirit only because she's on a sailboat in Lake Superior. She contacted all our guests as the show's producer, and that's what she often does when she's here. And even though she was out of state, she was eager to make sure that we covered late summer fun right here in central Iowa. School started, but summer isn't over yet. So we have two big celebrations this weekend, August 26th, 27th, and 28th. We'll have Kelly Wick live here in our studio to tell us about the 20th Prairie Fest in Huxley in South Story County. And then Lynn Scarlett to tell us about the 33rd annual Lincoln Highway Days in Nevada in the east part of our county. And we'll round out our program today by going north to Little Wall Lake near Jewell in Hamilton County. And Susan has submitted this to tell a bit of a local recreational history from 50 years ago when Little Wall Lake was home of sailing here in central Iowa. Brian Lammers, the director of the Hamilton County Conservation Board, will fill us in on just what's happened up there since. So stay tuned today for a lively show. And now it's time to welcome Kelly Wick, who's come to us from Huxley to tell us about the weekend, this coming weekend's Prairie Fest. Hello, Kelly, and why don't you start by introducing yourself?
All right, hello. My name is Kelly Wick, and I'm from Huxley. I've been there for 16 years. I have three kids, and I'm really excited to be here this morning to tell you all about Prairie Fest.
And you are the chairperson, is that right?
I am a co-chair. My husband is actually the other co-chair. And then I also have a wonderful committee that has been doing this for years, and they are an amazing group of people.
Isn't it nice to have people with institutional memory who have been there and done that?
Yes, they make things so much easier for me.
Well, now, what's been with this festival? It's been going on, 22 years?
22 years. It started in 1994.
And so I'm sure it's grown. It's a three-day festival, really, in terms of activity on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
That is correct. We have things going on all 3 days. Sunday, we just have a couple things, but the other 2 days are just packed full of activities.
So how does it kick off on Friday night?
Well, on Friday night, our inflatables open at 5 p.m. along with our food vendors. And at our amphitheater, we're going to have a bunch of kids' activities that are free. We'll have giant board games, which I am actually putting together this week. We're going to have a giant Candyland game.
These are giant games?
Giant games, life-size. So you can actually walk along a lot of these boards yourself. So Candyland and Sorry will be the board games that you can walk along. We'll have a giant Connect Four, Kerplunk, which is, I don't know, have you ever played Kerplunk?
You better explain that one.
That one is, it's actually made up of tomato cages, and it has those ball pit balls in it with sticks stuck underneath, uh-huh. And you pull those out, and whoever ends up with the most balls that fall down.
Yeah, so these are all life-size games.
These are all giant games, yes.
And they're not just for kids either, is it?
No, absolutely not. Anybody can come and play these games. We're going to have giant bananagrams.
A bananagram?
It's a lot like Scrabble.
Okay. There's all kinds of new stuff at Huxley I've never heard of.
There is. And we're also going to have a tic-tac-toe toss. And I was supposed to actually buy Frisbees for this a couple weeks ago, and I forgot to. So my daughters actually crocheted me some Frisbees.
Your daughters crocheted you Frisbees?
They are amazing, yes.
We're in an alternative universe here. I didn't think you could crochet
so
a Frisbee.
So you can crochet a Frisbee. And I can actually throw these Frisbees.
Oh, that's
and nobody
good.
Will get a bunk on the head. No broken windows. We'll be good.
So Friday is going to be sort of a zany start the festival thing, doing things that most people don't do. Is that right?
Absolutely. We'll have face painters also, balloon animals, and that's all free. We'll also have something in the entertainment tent for the adults. It's cocktails and canvas, where you come and you paint a picture. The artist comes with the picture, and then she shows you how to paint it and can pick your colors.
And that's awesome. People are going to be drinking and painting.
Yes. And
sounds like a risky business to me.
Actually, you know, I did it last year and it was lovely.
Really?
I'm not an artist,
and nobody
but I was
gets
very
out of
relaxed.
Hand.
No, it was great.
That's fantastic. And then as Saturday dawns, then what's going to be happening at the festival?
On Saturday, it starts out with a pancake breakfast over at the fire station. Over at Centennial Park, we have a 5K, 10K run. And then over back again, over on Main Street, we've got a parade at 10. Everybody loves parades.
I love a parade.
Cy and the ISU cheerleaders will be there, so that will be exciting. And our theme for our parade this year is Family Game Night. So I am so excited to see what people come up with.
So the people have to have a lot of input into Family Game Night, right?
Yes, and so their floats will reflect.
So everyone has a float in the parade. It's an entry into the parade mm-hmm. that portrays some
Correct.
Sort of game that's their favorite game.
That's
and their
right.
favorite pastime.
Whatever they remember from family game nights.
And so what do you know so far? Has anyone disclosed any secrets about what the floats are going to look like?
No, they haven't.
It's all tut, tut, tut.
It is, but I can't wait to see them.
So the parade, that's going to be a typical mid-Iowa parade where there's bands and tractors and fire engines. And
that's right. You can't have an Iowa parade without a tractor.
And you've got to throw candy.
Yes, we will be throwing candy.
Everyone's throwing candy. And remember mm-hmm. to throw it as far as you can
that's
so
right.
the kids don't walk out in the parade mm-hmm. route. And then after the parade, what's happening in the afternoon?
In the afternoon, we'll have our inflatables again. And we on Friday night, we're going to have laser tag. And then on Saturday, we'll have a game truck.
Okay.
So one of the trucks that she can go in and play video games.
Oh, video games. Mm-hmm. They are sort of popular, aren't they?
They are a little bit popular.
And then as the afternoon wanes into the evening, and keep in mind the food vendors are open all this time, right?
Correct, yes. And one really exciting thing that we'll be having on Saturday is a pie-eating contest. That is new this year. The Huxley Historical Society is sponsoring that. And they will have adult and children divisions.
That's fair, you know, that's fair.
So
they're all homemade pies made by kindly ladies in print dresses.
I'm sure they'll be delicious.
They'll be delicious. They'd better be if you're going to eat them fast.
Right. And also in the afternoon, we have sand volleyball and horseshoes. Those are over by the fire station. Mm-hmm. And there is a kids' pedal tractor pull.
Oh, yeah, where they have weights to pull.
That's right, and they have to pull them with the tractors.
Yeah, I've seen that at the state fair. That's delightful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's actually another eating contest in the afternoon that will be the Huxley Police Station versus the Huxley Fire and Rescue.
Oh, this is going to be serious.
Yes.
These are macho people who are going to outdo each other.
They are, and that's right after the pie-eating contest, so those are between 11:30 and 1.
Oh, now what are you going to feed those guys?
They are eating tenderloins that are given to us by Sandy's Grill in Huxley.
And these guys are going to be eating tenderloins as fast as they can?
Iowa tenderloins, yes. That'd be huge.
I don't want to stand anywhere near that. But it sounds like a creative idea. All these ideas are kind of unique and creative, actually. I have to compliment you on life-size games and these things that are not normally seen mm-hmm. in a festival. That someone's been very inventive about coming up with these things, and I think that's remarkable. Now, is there a dance or anything like that going on in the evening
there
on Saturday?
There is a teen dance that we will have starting at 8 p.m. at the fire station for high school students. And during that dance this year, what we're going to do is have once an hour, we're going to play games of Family Feud.
Oh, Family Feud. Now, you have to have a good MC, you know.
Yes, I have a lovely DJ.
Do
that
you?
Will do an awesome job. And we're going to pick groups of kids, groups of high school students, and they're going to be the families.
Oh, really?
They will compete together.
Well, that is funny, the Family Feud. You know, it's terrific. And that's going to be a fun activity at night. So there's a dance and the Family Feud. Anything else going on Saturday night?
On Saturday night, starting also at 8 p.m., we have a band in the beer tent.
Oh,
and
band, yeah.
There's a $5 cover for them. It's Blacktop. They are a cover band. They do country and rock. So
wow.
It should be
that's going to meet
a fun time.
The needs of people of both venues. It mm-hmm. seems like people are divided into country and rock.
Right.
And so everybody comes out of there feeling like I've had my evening of my music.
Right, I hope we have something for everybody.
Well, you do. It sounds like a delightful day. And I'm really impressed with how inventive this is and how many unusual things that you've programmed in here. And you're saying this is, what, the 22nd year?
22nd year, yes.
And that's the 22nd year of Prairie Fest in Huxley. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be bigger and better than usual.
Absolutely. We definitely want everyone to have something to do.
And so there's no excuse. How do you get to Huxley? What's the fastest way for me?
Oh, you can come down south on Highway 69. Mm-hmm. You'll come straight into Huxley.
In fact, you can't avoid Huxley.
You cannot avoid Huxley.
And the events get underway on Friday night, and they continue all day Saturday and into Saturday evening, where there's something for people of all ages. And I'd like to compliment you on some of the unique ideas that you've had.
Thank you.
And I think that as co-chairperson, you said your husband's your co-chair?
He is my co-chair.
Well, now, that's wonderful. You have total control. You're not going to be a dictator now. One family is controlling. No, I'm sure you have a lot of support.
No, we have about 10 people on our committee that are
Yeah. See,
awesome.
We have Scandinavian Days in Story City where I live. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much in touch with the myriad of things that have to be attended to and the army of people that have to put it together. Mm-hmm. So my compliments to anyone who steps out in any community and puts on a Summerfest program like this one. Mm-hmm. And typically, I haven't seen this much creativity and unusual stuff. The life-size games, I have to compliment you on originality and taking a real chance on things that are new. And then on Sunday, there's sort of a wrap-up. Is that right?
That's correct. We have a community worship service over at Nordkalsen Park. Mm-hmm. And then in the afternoon, we have the community band and choir concert at the high school.
Well, yeah, it's the Ballard Community Band, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a band that's pretty well known in the area, I believe. I'm aware of the Ballard Community Band. It's a pretty good size band and a very good band, too.
Mm-hmm.
These are not slovenly musicians.
No,
so
no.
This is a real nice way to tie off things, and we'll definitely enjoy that if we go down to Huxley. And you go down Highway 69, and there's Huxley, and there's Kelly Wicks, and all the people in Huxley who are friendly and dying to give you a good time.
That's
at
right.
Prairie Fest. And it's the 22nd year.
It is.
Of Prairie Fest, and I think one of the most creative years, too. So my compliments to you, and it would be really nice to talk to you after things are over. You're probably going to sleep for 2 days.
That's right, I think I will.
Have you had any real challenges in putting this together? Any things that have, or maybe last year, did anything go wrong? Was there a rain out last year?
We did have a lot of rain on Friday last year. And some of the things got canceled, but we still had the Onion Creek Cloggers out, and they did a great job for us.
Oh, yeah, they're back, too, I see.
They are back this year.
The Onion Creek
Cloggers,
everybody.
Yes.
Don't let them step on your toe.
No, they are an awesome group.
Okay, well, this is wonderful. We've been talking with Kelly Wicks about the wonderful Prairie Fest weekend coming up this weekend in Huxley. Just go down Highway 69, and you'll find yourself in the midst of a massive celebration.
That's right.
Put together by Kelly, well, and your husband, you got to mention his name.
His name is Chris.
Chris and Kelly. Very good. Well, good luck to you and bon appetit, and may no rain fall on your festival.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks for being with us today, Kelly. By the way, this is KHOI Community Radio, 89.1, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area. And today's program really stresses the activities going on in the area. In the first part of our program, we heard from Kelly Wick about what's coming up at Prairie Fest and celebrating 20 years this coming weekend, actually 22, in Huxley. Now we'll move east to Nevada, and we're going to speak with Lynn Scarlett, Executive Director of the Nevada Chamber of Commerce, telling us about Lincoln Highway Days coming up in Nevada also this weekend, August 26th to 28th. Now, hello, Lynn.
Good morning, Paul. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for talking with us today.
You bet.
And this has been a long-term festival. How long have we had Lincoln Highway Days?
This will be our 33rd year of having Lincoln Highway Days this year.
33rd year.
Yes. Hard to believe.
Now, tell us what's happening this year. Does the festival begin on Friday night?
It begins on Thursday night.
Thursday
night? Tomorrow night, yes.
Whoa.
And we kick off with a State Bank and Trust Customer Appreciation Barbecue. That's from 5 until 6:30 in front of the bank, and they'll be barbecuing hamburgers and hot dogs. They'll have live music from Jack O'Leary, and it'll just be a fun evening for everyone to just begin the celebration that we're about to have. And then on Friday, we have a luncheon from New Cara. That's a patient appreciation day, and that's from 11 to 1. And this will be the second year of the New Cara appreciation day. We've got a couple of new events Friday night. One of them is a sock hop that'll be held from 4 until 6:30. And that'll be held at Stuff Enough for Us, which is a consignment shop in downtown Nevada. And she's accepting free will donations for the Story County Animal Shelter. And then also another new event is the Chill in the Park, and this is sponsored by Cornerstone Church. They're going to be serving root beer floats, popsicles, and ice cream and other cool treats at the City Hall campus. And they're accepting free will donations for Cubby's Cupboard Food Pantry. That's a new food pantry that we have here in Nevada at the middle school.
Well, it sounds like people are really not only attempting to have fun activities, but also to have a sort of a collateral effect of raising money for charities.
Yes, yes. That's many organizations' goals, and this is a great way for them to showcase what their organization does, as well as to benefit a pet project, if you want to call it that. We'll also be holding our fourth annual Lincoln Highway Dash on Friday night. This is a glow run, so we've got glow-in-the-dark T-shirts. We'll have bracelets and other glowy items. We give away chamber bucks.
Now, wait a minute. Glow-in-the-dark T-shirts?
You bet.
I've got to see that. That's the T-shirt itself or just the lettering?
The lettering on the T-shirt.
Glow. Okay, well, I'm looking for a glow-in-the-dark T-shirt.
Yeah, sorry. I'll work on that, though.
It's still going to be unbelievably cool. I like that.
It is. The run starts at 8 o'clock, and it'll start at the City Hall campus building, and the runners will head west on Lincoln Highway, hence the name Lincoln Highway Dash, and then they pick up the trails that we have here in Nevada, just west of Adams Cycle, and then they'll follow the bike trail until 8th Street, and then they come north on 8th Street to I Avenue, and then they go west, and they end behind Quirk's Grill and Bar in downtown Nevada.
So they're going to be thirsty by that time.
They will be, yes, and we have water that will be at the halfway point, thanks to our friends at Story County Medical. And then we'll also have bottles of water at the end of the race from BioLife in Ames. So we're excited to have our fourth annual. We're hoping for good weather. In the event of rain, we will have information on the telephone here at the chamber as well as on Facebook. And we do have an alternate route that would be out at the Score Park. But we prefer the Lincoln Highway run part of it. So that's kind of fun.
And then Saturday's a big day, right?
Saturday's a big day. We kick off with a breakfast at the Catholic Church that starts at 7 in the morning. So you can go and get all powered up from breakfast, and then the parade starts at 10. The theme this year is Nevada Proud, and we will have it led by the American Legion as well as some local celebrities. And then immediately following the parade, we've got the Firefighters Annual Hog Roast. And then downtown will be filled with activity. We've got arts and crafts downtown. We'll have 11 different food vendors. G. Willie Inflatables will be downtown, so we'll be selling wristbands for that. The Baptist Church will have their free kids games. We've got an antique tractor display at City Hall parking lot. The Masons will be giving train rides for the kids. We've got the Iowa Central Modular Railroad. That'll be in the Nevada Senior Center. And if you are a miniature train buff, and I love watching trains go around on a track, this is the place to be. They fill the senior center with their tracks and all their different displays that they have. So that's a lot of fun. We've also got entertainment downtown. The Skunk River Jazz Band will be performing at noon, and then that's followed by Center Stage Dance as well as the Main Street Dance. And we have a big tent with chairs underneath, so it's comfortable. We'll be entertained in between by an MC, thanks to our friends at the Talent Factory. So it'll be a busy afternoon with a lot of fun. Then we have at 1 o'clock our kids' pedal tractor pull, and that's being sponsored by Arnold Motor Supply. And that goes until the kids are all checked through, and then we're going to have an adult pedal tractor pull.
That is new, an adult
pedal tractor pull.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes. And they're little kids' tractors that are pedaling.
They're going to keep them. That's going to be a challenge.
Yes, but that's what the fun of it is. And it's just all for a good time and a little bragging rights. So that'll be, this is the first time we've done the adult pedal tractor pull. So come on down and watch the kids. And then immediately following the kids, we'll have the adults. Our Queen Anne Bed and Breakfast is doing their second croquet tournament. That starts from 1 to 4, and they're asking that people wear white hats and white shirts, as is tradition for croquet. That'll be held on their grounds, and they have beautiful grounds, so check that out. Central Presbyterian Church will do their ice cream social, as they have for many, many years. The second annual hot air balloon rides will be held at the old high school football field. That's being put on by REMAX, and it's free. You do have to have a ticket, but those are available all over town. Our Nevada PTA is going to be offering a family movie night at the elementary at 6:30, and they're showing Zootopia. And then at 7 o'clock, you can head to the Talent Factory where country legend Billy Dean will perform. And we've got a teen dance happening at the same time at gatherings. And they're also collecting food donations for Cubby's Cupboard. And then we wrap up Saturday night with the Nevada JC's Beer Garden down at the fairgrounds, and they have Brother Bailey performing. And then, of course, you know, Sunday morning isn't complete without breakfast, and the American Legion is going to be offering a Sunday morning breakfast from 8 to 12:30. And then at 3 o'clock, Keith Harkin will be performing his ball and chain tour at the Talent Factory, and tickets are still available for that show. So a very busy few days in Nevada with lots of fun and lots of different activities.
Well, what impresses me is the variety of activities and all the things that are going on simultaneously.
Yes.
On Saturday night, look at the choices you have, no matter what your age.
Right. Yeah. And that's what we have been, the committee's been working very hard to make it a family-friendly event with lots of different activities, many free activities. Some there are charges for, like the inflatables, but the majority of the things going on are just free and fun.
Now, Lynn, have you been involved with the festival before?
This is my third festival. I came to the chamber in 2012, right after the festival had been held. So this is the fourth year that the chamber will be doing the festival. Prior to that, there was a community committee that organized Lincoln Highway Days.
So that's different. As executive director of the chamber, this is new that you, the last few two or three years, the chamber has been the center point in planning and executing the festival.
Yes, that's correct.
And that's worked out pretty well, I hope.
It has been. You know, there's always the folks that want it to be the way it used to be, with the rodeo and with the carnival and having it at the fairgrounds. And everything is costly to do things like that. And the chamber's emphasis is on the businesses, and the businesses are downtown. So we've moved the event downtown. And, you know, we always invite people. If they are interested in putting on a rodeo, the Lincoln Highway Day Committee would be happy to promote it and include it in our flyers. But as far as paying for those kinds of expenses, we just don't have that kind of money.
Well, I think that whenever you make change, that's going to be resisted by some folks who have an investment in the way things were.
Right.
But I think you're right to emphasize the tie-in with the community and the Main Street and business and... Actually, Nevada has such a nice and attractive downtown with a lot of open area. I think that that's a smart move, and I think probably as more and more people get used to this format, they're going to wonder why it wasn't done a long time ago. And I think you're doing a good job of really having a mix of things going on that are attractive to people of all ages, and it seems to have a pace to it where you've got activities that run into each other so that even someone with attention deficit disorder would really be stimulated here.
That's true, yes. That's what we're aiming for.
Well, you think, and of course, the interesting thing about the background of the Lincoln Highway Festival is the Lincoln Highway itself, which is really sort of an institution. There are certain people out there who are old highway buffs who are really hobbyists about all the old named highways and classic highways. There were, I suppose most of them were paved in the 1930s or before, And Lincoln Highway is one of the major thoroughfares in the original paved highway system of America. And this is partially what's being celebrated. So there's a real historical tie-in too, right, Lynn?
There is. And in fact, the Lincoln Byways will have a booth in our downtown craft area. And she'll be sharing, it's Jan Gammon, and she'll be sharing information about the Lincoln Highways, how it's traveled across the country and ways to get involved with it. So, yeah, be sure and visit her booth on Saturday from 11 to 5.
So from model trains to history to fun things for adults and kids, it's hard to do better than Nevada this weekend. Coming up in late August, it's right at the end of the summer, right before school gets underway for the first or second week, and it's really sort of an exclamation point to the summer of 2016, Lynn, right?
Yes, you are very right, Paul.
This is the last thing for the summer, and one more memorable thing in Nevada, and this is a lot of years you've been doing this, too, so I'm sure it'll be successful this year. And thank you, Lynn, for your leadership and all the information you've given us today. And, boy, good luck. Have a good time and pray for sun.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, thank you, Lynn. And Lynn Scarlett is the executive director of the Nevada Chamber of Commerce, giving us a preview of Lincoln Highway Days in Nevada. This is KHOI Community Radio 89.1, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area. And for the first half of our program, we've heard about what's coming up in Huxley in the south and Nevada to the north. But Susan Franson has sent us a special report about a different kind of summer fun back when Little Wall Lake near Jewell in Hamilton County was the home of sailing in central Iowa nearly 50 years ago. And here's Susan's segment.
Hello, Paul, and listeners to Local Talk. This is Susan Franzen, frequent co-host for the Wednesday program, which focuses on our listening area around Ames. I'm sending in my segment of today's show because I am currently pretty far away. I'm on a sailboat in Lake Superior, just off the coast of Wisconsin, which has been my summer home for the past 18 years. But I hate to be away from KHOI. Of course, I can and do listen to programs on my computer or phone, but today I'm reminded of a great bit of local history that I want to present before another summer goes by. My husband Fritz can add a lot to the pieces I have collected. Before I left Ames, I was able to record some recollections from Bernie Gerstein, the person who introduced us and many others to small boat sailing in central Iowa. That was over 50 years ago in the mid-1960s, and I believe many who participated are still alive. So I want to present this as a bit of nostalgia for you and an amazing glimpse of the past for those who can't imagine that Little Wall Lake, just south of Jewell in Hamilton County, was the origin of sailing in central Iowa. And for quite a few people, it provided a lot of fun, including sailboat races and building a fleet of small boats of the Peanut class. That was a community-wide event that involved over 26 people who built 26 boats. The Peanut class boats were 9-foot sailboats made of wood and designed to be carried on the top of a car. Why and how were they built? And above all, what did they mean to those who sailed and built them? Here's Bernie's description of why he wanted to sail on Little Wall Lake.
Well, Little Wall was the closest lake to where we lived. It was only 15 miles or so north of Ames. And I had a sailboat, and it was the thing to do. We didn't have Big Creek or Sailorville at that time. Well, it was the Ames Sailing Society, as I recall, ASS, and I'd done so much racing in Florida when I was a kid that I took any chance I could to organize some place where I could race against boats. And generally, I was the most experienced sailor there, and I generally won, so that made me feel very good. And I organized as many of those as I could.
My interest in all of this came from the fact that both my husband Fritz and I fell in love with sailing through going out with Bernie in the summer of 1964. At the time, we were all in our late 20s. Fritz and Bernie were colleagues in the chemistry department at ISU, which is how they met. Sailing was new to Fritz and me, but we saw immediately that it was something we could do right here in central Iowa if we had a boat. I always enjoyed it, but it was Fritz's passion. Fritz, why don't you tell why you liked sailing so much?
Well, I think it combines three things. It combines more than three things, especially when you get to boat building. That's another characteristic. But the three things that I think of immediately, if you already have a boat and don't need to build one, are the aesthetics. Almost everyone sees beauty in a sailboat, and you can see that from the shore, or you can see it when you're on the boat. The curvature and the grace are just stunning. The second is that it puts you in touch with nature, as very few things do. You are responding in a sailboat, constantly responding, if you're a very conscientious skipper, to changes in wind speed and velocity, and you must be very much aware of what's going on in that realm. And the third is that it's a sport. Many people think of sailing as being something you sit around and do, but there's a great deal of activity that is required in bringing the boat from one side of the wind to the other, which you must do when you either tack or jibe, and just in general, it can end up being a lot of work. And to do that work with skill as a team, when you have a boat, which the Peanuts weren't, but when you have a boat that has a crew greater than one, to do it as a team requires the building of teamwork, and that's a lot of fun. When I taught sailing, which I have done a number of times, that is small boat sailing, I taught everyone that I could what I thought was the most important thing to learn first. And that is how to right the boat and get it bailed dry and get it going again. And if the boat couldn't be righted and bailed dry, then it shouldn't be raced or sailed even, because it's dangerous. And so for that reason, we did a lot of capsizing just in practice to make sure that it could be done. But it's also the case that if you sail a boat right on the edge of what it's capable of doing, and if you are certain that you can bring it back up and bail it dry and get going again, then you can sail it right at that edge where there might be a puff of wind that you didn't anticipate that actually takes the boat over. And that happened to us a number of times, as I'm sure you recall.
Now let's get to the building of the Peanuts.
Well, Bernie was a great salesman. I had nothing to do with that. Going around to people that he knew, and these were people in the medical profession, in the engineering profession, and a few scientists, and suggesting to them that they might want to build a Peanut. And 26 of them did. Now, I don't know how many of those 26 were actually sailed by anybody. And I know there were probably many who tried them, and they found out that it was just more than they could master, because like sailing a potato chip, and you really have to anticipate, develop special knacks for dealing with such a small boat. They were really designed to be used by kids, and that just never came to pass in Ames, Iowa. There wasn't enough organization on the sailing teaching side. I mean, Bernie was also in the process of getting tenure, and so we couldn't spend a lot of time on weekends teaching kids to sail. What time we did, we spent building the boats, and it was Bernie's enthusiasm for sailing and his ability to convince people that what they really wanted to do was build a Peanut, and lots of them did.
In the description of boat building so far, one essential thing has been left out. One of the things that made possible the completion of so many boats was the fact that there were just two of the frames built. So when one boat was finished, its builder just popped his boat off and took it home, Wiley helped the next get started. It was each one teach one. This resulted in a great sense of camaraderie, and also people with special skills mass-produced indispensable items. Bernie built all the rudders, and Fritz remembers gluing up the mast blanks from Sitka spruce. When they ordered 26 sails together, they got a 20% discount. And, of course, Little Wall Lake played into this, too, because it was an ideal place to just go out, even after work, but certainly on a weekend. It was just a few miles from Ames.
We did form a little sailing group called the Ames Sailing Society, and there were a variety of boats. There were the windmill class, which Bernie was very much involved in, and that he understood very well, and he'd built a windmill class boat, which is a 14-foot boat that's built on much the same kind of basic sail plan. It's a hard chine boat, and you build a frame, and you put the strakes to the frame, then you fasten the plywood to the strakes, and then you pop it off the frame, and you've got a boat. And these boats, then there were the Y Flyers and the M16s. These are just names of classes of boats that were sailed on Little Wall Lake by a lot of different people who came to understand it. The point is a major point, but it doesn't matter when you're in the boat. It's you and the water and the wind, and that's what you need. And it doesn't matter what's on the shore, and it doesn't matter then what facilities there are. It's just you and the water and the wind, and if you're racing, it's the other sailboats you're competing with.
Bernie has a few things to say about the process of building the Peanuts. And one of the amazing things was, because there were so many doctors, that they started off, they couldn't just build them in his garage like they started. They needed more space, and so they went to the basement of the McFarland Clinic.
I think the major reason we were allowed to do that initially is because of Bill McCormick's influence, and we had other doctors, Louis Bennett, and I think that's how Ken Fawcett got into sailing.
And the McFarland Clinic got tired of all the dust coming up, so they kicked us out. Oh, yeah, we went to the McCormick's house. How did we build the Peanut? Well, we made the frame in the garage. We made the frames so that we could plank the boat. The frame was upside down, and we put on the sides and put on the bottom, and then turned it up. And put it in a cradle and put the deck on. And that was it. Then we had a boat. Then we had to build a mast, of course, the mast and boom. But we had the sail. And it was a nice little boat to sail, as I recall.
Well, someone else who built one was another chemistry professor, Klaus Rudenberg, whose daughter Ursula recalls what appealed to him about the boat building process.
Well, my father always was great at doing projects. He was very good with his hands, and he liked to think things through. And I think what I remember was that he used to explain to us the physics of the wood, and it was always, you know, so much different than what you'd think was happening as a layperson. I was always amazed at what he would explain to me about the physical world, because it was so different from what it looked like on the surface. And there was a lot of physics involved with building a boat. And he did explain it to us while he was doing it. It was very interesting. And when he was done, my older sister, Lucia, and I discussed names for the boat with him. And he had painted the boat bright red. So we said, let's call the boat Lucifer, because it was red. And he became convinced that this was some veiled inside joke we were making about drugs, that it was a drug reference. And he refused to call it Lucifer because he thought we were up to something.
We've mentioned some of the people who built Peanuts, but before we go, we'd like to tell about a couple more.
One person I would like to mention who worked very hard on getting the very important frames on which the boat is built, made, and made with precision, was Bob Leacock. And I don't think there are many people around anymore who will remember Bob, but Bob was a theoretical physicist who'd been hit by polio in his early 20s, I think, and he had to walk with the aid of canes. His legs were not adequate for him to be able to get around, and yet he was very enthusiastic. And after building a peanut, he went on to buy one of the hottest boats made, a 505, that's right, an Olympic-class boat. And he would sail that with his friend Richard Smith. It was a surprise that he wanted to do that, but it was a measure of his commitment, overcoming his handicap to whatever extent he could.
One of the very important members of the sailboat building team was Fritz Munn, owner of Munn Lumber at that time, and he got all the marine plywood for these boats. They were beautiful boats because they were built out of this lovely mahogany faced plywood. And finally, almost 50 years after the boats were built, Fritz and I received a Facebook message from the man whose father bought our 20-year-old peanut as a birthday present for his 12-year-old son. By that time, 1992, our little boat had seen a lot of use. You can imagine how surprised we were to find the following message on our phone last Christmas. Susan, I know it has been a long time, and I hope things are going well for you and Fritz. I have a request and hope you or Fritz could help me out. As you may remember, 33 years ago, the two of you passed on a wonderful little boat, the Peanut, to a little boy turning 12. Well, that little boy has grown up, and the Peanut has long since moved on. I now have two small children. My son Benjamin is 7, and my daughter Samantha is 4. I would love to build them a Peanut to learn to sail in. So is there any chance that you might still have the plans or know someone who has the plans so I could build one for my kids? Please say hello to Fritz for me and thank you again for a gift a lot of years ago that taught me to love sailing, something I still love today. Oliver Gross. And it all started on Little Wall Lake.
That was a pretty amazing story, especially if you've driven past Little Wall Lake on a summer weekend when fast motorboats are gunning it from one end of the lake to the other. There have certainly been a lot of changes at Little Wall Lake in the past 50 years, and to learn more about these changes, we're contacting the director of the Hamilton County Conservation Board, Brian Lammers, and Evan is getting him on the phone right now. Certainly, that was an interesting segment that Susan put on for us. I had no idea that that sort of thing was happening up there. It's a world unto itself. And how creative that was for these people to get together and come up with this not only marvelous idea, but the physicality of building them and the thrill of investing in the task and creating the boats and especially the size of the boat and the availability of that to young people. And it's fantastic that that happened. It's such an education for me. And really, I'm so impressed that that happened at Little Wall Lake. Because in my memory at Little Wall Lake, when I was growing up near Story City, Little Wall Lake, I remember as a actually, almost a wetland. It was full of weeds and reeds and just patches of open water. And then sometime, probably in the 50s, I'd have to talk with Mr. Lammers about that, it was dredged to become an open lake. And since then, it has been an open lake. And not a big lake, but a nice lake, a charming lake, and one that gets a lot of use. There's a large campground up there, and there's a lot of opportunities to fish. There are a lot of homes that have sprouted up around the lakeside. And Little Wall Lake is much more impressive and wonderful than it was when I was growing up and saw only a sort of a wetland with reeds poking up. So many things that we enjoy today we didn't used to have in such proliferation. And one of them are the well, is the lakes we have, the recreational opportunities we enjoy, that water recreation brings us. And, of course, when I was young, nobody envisioned Big Creek or any of those things that we enjoy in central Iowa now that are big-time opportunities to boat and recreate and to have beaches to enjoy. And so we have to count ourselves lucky as seeing progress in water recreation in Iowa. And that was a great story about the peanut boats. I just didn't know a thing about it. And now we're welcoming the chairperson of the director of the Hamilton County Conservation Board, Brian Lammers. Brian, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, I have a lot to ask you about because we've just had this wonderful segment on the peanut boats at Little Wall Lake and all the people who were sailing enthusiasts up there. And you might give us a little history of Little Wall Lake. I have some recollections I've just shared with the audience about in my youth. I remember it as sort of a wetland up there. So you might tell us about Little Wall Lake and the evolution of that.
Okay. Little Wall Lake is approximately 250 acres, and it's termed a natural lake by the Iowa DNR. It's actually one of the most southern glacial lakes in the state of Iowa. It actually was carved from the Wisconsin Glacier movement some 14,000 plus years ago. So it's obviously pretty old, as a glacier lake would be. The water is held by a combination of recessional moraines rather than a significant geological feature. So there's really not a whole lot of watershed with this lake. There's not a whole lot of hillsides around it. It's less than 1% for watershed. So what that means is the water mainly comes from some of the watershed around, but it's not even creek-fed. There are some natural springs in the lake, but most of the water comes from its precipitation here we have in the state, either from rain or snow.
Is that right? So there's only a limited spring-fed source for water.
It's, right, yep.
It's sort of a collection of precipitation and just the accumulation of precipitation.
Right.
When was that dredged? See, I remember that being as a wetland when I was a kid, and
yeah.
We drive by on Highway 69, and it just looked like a great place to hunt ducks or something. When did they dredge that to make it deep?
Well, the lake actually still wants to be a marsh. It tries so hard to be a marsh, but because of human effort, we won't let it become back to a marsh. So there's actually some dredging that took place back in around 1956. What was the State Conservation Commission then brought in some dredging machines, and they did about 60-plus acres of dredging in some channels to try to open it up for recreation. It's been kind of up and down all through the years, and then back in the 90s, there was a push and through federal Clean Lakes program, through federal money, the DNR was able to secure some federal funds in order to bring in dredging machines. And they did a hydraulic dredge at that time back in 2000, 2001, right in that area where the lake was dredged. And we only did about 100 acres out of 250. The problem we had with that time dredging is that we were actually going through a low water cycle here for, you know, climate-wise. So the lake was already kind of on the downside for the amount of water it had. And then we had, you know, insufficient rains that year. So we had some issues with the hydraulic dredge because as the dredge needs to float, the water that was pumped out with the flurry was supposed to come back into the lake. Well, it took a long time, so it had a hard time keeping the dredge going. But it worked out.
Yeah, now that sounds like a real challenge because, you know, you are dependent on the amount of precipitation. And I didn't realize that the dredge equipment had to float.
Yeah, this particular unit that they had hired out was a floating unit. Basically, they just took a giant vacuum, what they call a hydraulic dredge, and just ran along the bottom. It took the sediment and everything out, and then the water was allowed to trickle back into the lake through a holding pond that was constructed on the east side of the lake.
Now, what about fishing in Little Wall Lake? Is that regularly stocked with various kinds of fish?
Well, fishing has always been up and down in that lake over the years. Fishing, you know, unfortunately right now is kind of on the downhill side of things. It's a lake that that can really hold some crappie and bluegill and largemouth bass and, you know, really good catfish lake, just because it's a shallow lake. There have been northern pike stocked in the lake. There's been a private club that has stocked walleyes in the past. But the lake right now is suffering from vegetation loss, and that's mainly due to the introduction of grass carp back in the 80s and maybe early 90s. They put in some grass carp, which unfortunately, you know, they do a good job of taking the vegetation out, but they can also do a good job of keeping it out. So there's really hard to find that vegetation for panfish and, you know, sports fish like that.
So this is a very dynamic environment, and especially with regard to fish, that alters the environment, the type of fish.
It's a really hard balance to create a recreational lake but a fishing lake at the same time, especially when you're dealing with a shallow lake. It's going to go in a, you know, it's going to go in different swings, a pendulum, if you will. It's going to go good on one side and then back to the other way. It's just that type of lake right now.
But, you know, over time, you've really developed quite a extensive campground up there. There's space for how many different campsites?
Yeah, our campground renovation project, you know, camping's been involved ever since the early 70s. But that, you know, it never met the demand of the campers that it kept changing. Even through the early 2000s time period, we were fighting some really old infrastructure. So in 2009, the County Conservation Board, we received some funding from our supervisors to get started, and we did it in about four different phases. There's a total of 102 sites at one time. We pretty much completely renovated everything within a four-year time period. We still have about 106 campsites. Now there's about 53 of them that have full hookup. All the other sites have water and electricity, and we've also expanded out to the east a little bit to make those campsites much bigger than they were in the past. So we were pretty proud of that project, and there's a lot of campers that come in now.
Oh, yeah. When I drive by on Highway 69, it looks like every week there are a lot of campers parked there, and I just wondered, are there a lot of units parked there during the week, too? And are there some that are parked there all the time?
Yeah, there's some weekends, you know, we'll fill up completely. But, you know, on average, you know, not including the holiday weekends, we'll probably average 80, 90 units out there, you know, out of the 106 sites that we have. Weekdays, you know, it'll stay in that 30 range pretty easily. So we're glad that people can come out and enjoy the facilities that we were able to put out there. And, you know, they really enjoy the lake. There's a lot of kids that like to go boating and tubing now. So they, you know, the lake is really a good time of year to be out using it.
Well, I've enjoyed talking with you, Brian. Thanks for all the background and the things that I didn't know about Little Wall Lake. It's nice to learn something every day, and you've helped me do that. Thank you very much, Brian.
You're welcome.
And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today have been Paul Wearson in the KHOI studio and Susan Franson, remotely from a sailboat on Lake Superior today. We started out the show with Kelly Wick from the Prairie Fest in Huxley, followed by Lynn Scarlett telling us about Lincoln Highway Days in Nevada, and we ended with a remote segment on recreational sailing long ago at Little Wall Lake. This included recollections from Bernie Gerstein, Fritz Franson, and Ursula Rudenberg. And for an update on Little Wall Lake, today we heard from Brian Lammers, director of the Hamilton County Conservation Board. So thanks to all those folks. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon at 7 p.m. today, and you can listen to today's Local Talk show and any part of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org, thanks to our webmaster, Ron Carson. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed. Local Talk today was engineered by Evan Taylor, and our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Now, if you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. And remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening now, and see you again on the radio.